Is Leonor Leighton Naranjo, and this presentation will be part of the graduate student oral competition. Yes, thank you.
Thank you for the introduction and the opportunity to be here. So today I'm going to talk about a preliminary study that we did in Abelia to establish the base life of the plant. And I'm pretty sure that you're asking, now, why Abelia? So me as a breeder in training, for me Abelia is a really wonderful plant, basically because it's really versatile. We have different leaf colors that go from green to yellow to someone in between. We even have some hybrids that they have some red color. Also, they have these very beautiful small cluster of flowers at the end of the shoots that they're fragrant. They go from white to pink. We have some yellows. We have this really deep pink too. And as you can see in the picture, it's not just the flowers, it's just, they also have sepals. And one of the important things of the sepal is that the sepals remain in the flower, in the plant when the flower drops. So we have these kind of antique looking sepals. We have the pinks and we also have some green ones. So all this versatility in one plant would allow us to have three different products for just the same plant. So we're going to have just shoots with leaves, we're going to have the shoots with the flowers and the sepals, and just the sepals. So we have three different products for just one plant. Also, the management in the open field is pretty easy. The only cultural practices that we do in our plants is we prune them every other year. And if you want to grow them in the greenhouse, it's also easy. It's a long-term plant, so induced flowering is not a big deal. And it's pretty disease and insect resistant. On the field, we only get spider mites in some years, and in the field, we only have aphids. Also, the propagation is pretty straightforward. It's for subgood cutting, so that's other very good quality of Abelia. What we did, we test different genotypes. We tried to be the broader genetic background possible. So we took one wild species, open pollination lines, some hybrids of our program, one of the bar crosses of our program, three of our releases, and a commercial cultivar. Also, we use this study as a way to introduce high schoolers to the horticulture. So these are our young scholars, so they help us in the data collection and in the establishment of the experiment. So we transport the shoots dry from the field to the lab. We train them to 60 centimeters. We place them in individual containers with the ionized water. We do not use any hydration solution or holding solution. We put it on a growth chamber at 20 Celsius degrees with 60 to 70% relative humidity and with a 24-hour fruit period. And we trim every shoot at the end, 5 millimeters every 3 days, and we change the water of the containers every 3 days also. We measure chlorophyll content on each shoot in fully expanded leaves with a spud meter every 4 days, and we took the measurement of the chlorophyll content as a measurement of the greener of the leaves and also as an indirect measurement of the stress. And also we measure the weight in every shoot, every 3 days, as an assessment of the cut flower. As the flower of Abelia is really small, I'm pretty sure that we never make as a principal flower, but can be used as a filler or maybe as a cut foliage. So that's because we measure the weight. The experimental design was a randomized complete randomized design with 11 genotypes with 10 reps per each genotype. And the base life was established as the number of days until visual damage was observed in 50% of the shoots. And the damage was yellowing, leaf drop, of wilting. If you go to the results, the base life of the majority of the genotypes were 55 days, except for our back crosses that were 24 or 22 days. Which is kind of interesting because this is a back cross between Chinensis and an F1 between Chinensis and Francis Mason. So you can see the parents that they do 55 days of base life. And a hybrid between Chinensis and Francis Mason did okay, and the reciprocal did okay too. So we believe this is basically due for the inbreeding depression that I really present, that is a self-incompatible plant and has a lot of inbreeding depression. If you want to know more about that, you can go and see my poster on Friday. In terms of the weight of the shoots, you can see here that it was pretty stable over the time. except for the first 12 days when we see this pattern. That was basically every time that we trim the shoots, they increase weight. So the first day, we trim them, and then the weight increase a little bit, then we trim them again, and then increase the weight, then decrease, then we trim them, increase again, until the first 12th day. After the day number 12, they kind of start more stable. So if you can see here the data, I'm just showing you the first two data points and the last two data points. So there is multiple data points in the middle. There is no significant weight loss over time in 55 days in all the shoots. Even the two genotypes that have 22 and 24 days, they didn't lose weight in that period of time. And which is pretty interesting, this is the back crosses. They weigh more than the parents, but they weigh less than the hybrids, which is pretty cool. This is just a timeline of one shoot. This is Francis Mason over time. So this is day 0, day 6, day 9, 13, 16, 18, 23rd. By day 23rd, the shoots start losing flowers over time, but by day 27, the shoots start producing new flowers again. That's day 33. Now by day 47 and 40, almost all the flowers drop, but the sepals remain on the shoots, and the leaves remain on the shoots also. If we see the chlorophyll content, they perform different as the weight in terms of the back cross. So these are the back crosses, those are the parents. And these are the hybrids, so it's not like the same parent as we saw on the weight. But if we see the data, again, just the first two data points is the last two, we can see there is a significant increase in chlorophyll content in all the genotypes except for the hybrid and lavender mist. That the chlorophyll content increased, but it wasn't significant, which is really clear if you see all the data points in the graph. Which is very interesting for us that the chlorophyll content increased that much, because it means that the plants weren't in that big stress in the growth chamber. We use the chlorophyll content as a stress measurement, so if the plants were stressed, it means that the chlorophyll content should decrease, which didn't happen. And the increment was really big, from 10%, but the one that surprised us was Francis Mason, when it increased more than 200%. We kind of expect this in Francis Mason because it's a yellow cultivar. So as the light intensity in the growth chamber is less than the open field, the chlorophyll content will increase, but we never expect it to be that high. So this is Francis Mason, a timeline again. You can see that in the first day, the shoot itself has some damage in the flower and the leaves. But by day 7, the same leaves with the damage, they turn green. They didn't drop, they just started turning green. We have some damage in this shoot due to handling, so we change it. So this is a different shoot that's supposed to look different. But still, it's the same pattern. The shoots start turning green and green and green. Even by day 55, all this growth on the top of the shoot is new growth produced on the growth chamber after 55 days. So to finish my presentation is to give you the conclusions. In this preliminary study, we can see that Avila has a very promising base life. In 8 of the 11 genotypes, the base life was 55 days, which I think is pretty good. There is no significant differences of the weight on weight over time in all the genotypes. The chlorophyll content increases in all the genotypes, even though it was significant in only 9 of the 11 of them. And our next steps is repeat the study with a hydrating solution at the beginning, test the storage life, test the base life in for 24 hours for the period. This is just one day data, so we need to repeat it. And also test the base life or shoot just with the sepals and the leaves without the flowers to see if that affects something. I want to thank the Young Scholar Program to give us the opportunity to introduce these high schoolers to horticulture, and the Institute of Plant Breeding, Genomics, and Genetics for funding my research. If I have any questions, I'm more happy to answer. Thanks. No. Yeah, all these plants are resistant to Georgia. Yeah, they are our advanced hybrids, so they are pretty resistant to Georgia. We have some hybrids that are more cold resistant, but not the ones that I haven't tested them yet.
Mm-hmm. So is that just a preliminary criteria that you use?
Yeah, we just saw what was pretty standard in measurement, the base life or some cut flowers or foliage, and one of them was yellowing of the leaves. We never expected the leaves to turn greener over time, to be honest. They did some preliminary studies years ago in my lab, and in different hybrids, and they performed really poorly. So when I tried to do it, my advisor was like, don't do that. And I was like, I can do it. Yes. We measure in, sorry? We're measuring fully expanded leaves, and we're trying to take three measurements per shoot. So every data point is three leaves, like on the base, in the middle, and on the top, and then we just average the measurements.
So what's happening to the lower leaves?
What do you mean? They remain on the shoot. We didn't lose them. No, the measurements were pretty consistent. We didn't see like a difference between the lower leaves. They were like more less greener, and then the upper ones were more greener than the average. No, the readings were pretty consistent in the three parts of the shoot. Any more questions? Yes. No, we didn't see any rooting. I think basically it's because we train them in the base 5 millimeters every 3 days, so we kind of avoid them to root because we keep cutting them over time. Any other question? No? All right, thank you.